Tonight's encouragement talk will be offered by senior Dharma teacher Alan Richardson.
Kate gave us a wonderful instruction at the beginning of our retreat, at the very beginning. She said, trust the one who doesn't know. Put your trust in the one who doesn't know. Which helps explain why I was asked to give this talk. Because I don't know. And the last couple of years have been this kind of roller coaster of knowing less. I'm not knowing more as I get older. I'm knowing less. And some of these things that I don't know anymore, I've talked about here and at Hank's, so I won't go into too much detail. But, you know, I thought that I knew who I was. And I don't know. And I know my name, my address, my parents' names. But I don't know what kind of person I am. And this not knowing is painful. And what happened was, when my behaviors would come into contradiction with these ideas I had about who I was, oh yeah, I knew the self was impermanent, porous, blah, blah, blah. But I still let myself think that, you know, there was some constants. No. Because when the contradictions always happen between our behaviors and who we think we are. But the usual attempts to paper it over, oh, I couldn't amend it the way you heard it because I'm not that kind of person. I just couldn't go there anymore. And my hope is, as I said before, that maybe I can be a little kinder in that not knowing. So it's painful, but it's has possibilities in it. And another thing that I don't know anymore is, so I was talking about my so-called character. I don't know about my body anymore. I thought I really knew my body. I had a great deal going, a great relationship with my body. And the deal was I would take reasonable care of it, and then it would do anything I wanted it to. And I would do some, you know, pretty crazy things. Just think of the mountain version of Kate's sea stories. And that was really fun for a long time. And I would push my body and it would just keep going. And then I turned 60. So those of you who are younger, try to avoid that. I turned 60 my body started to have a mind of its own. I don't know how else to put it. It started to do things that didn't go with what I knew about it. And, you know, I became a regular at a physical therapy place where I'm still spending a lot of time because my body wouldn't do the things I knew it could do. And so, yeah, when I get up in the morning and I swing my legs over the edge of the mattress, as Carol said so beautifully last night, I know that I have faith that the floor is not going to give way. But my legs are another matter altogether. I don't know if when I put my foot on the floor, if my heel's going to feel like I'm stepping on broken glass when there's no broken glass there. And I don't know if my knee is going to balk and I'm going to want to sit down for a few more seconds before I tested. And I don't even know which knee. I don't know if it's the one that had surgery and all those months and months of PT, or if it's the other one that I think is acting up just out of jealousy. Why does the right knee get all the attention? And I can't, you know, I can't sit the way I used to. I can't do quarter lotus. I knew that that was my zazen posture. And I can't always do the full prostration. Sometimes I know I can't. Sometimes I know I can. Sometimes I just don't know. And I'm afraid to test it because I don't want to be in pain for a couple of days. So this knowing too has disappeared. And maybe with that too it comes a kind of opening, because I think I've become more patient with other people whose body does not do what they know it should, or worse, what other people know it should. You know, why are you moving so slow? Do we think we know what people's bodies should do? But we don't really know. So I'm hoping that there's a little more compassion there. And I'm not saying that I know what my friend Dave is going through, who lost all knowledge of his body, all of it, and has slowly been piecing it back together. I can't say, Dave, I know how you feel. That would be so pretentious and awful. But I know what it is not to know. I know what it is not to know if you'll recover fully. And if it'll get worse, if I'll end up like Dad, bedridden. And if I do, I hope this practice I do with you will make it less awful than it was for him, that not knowing. And there's another opening in the not knowing. And I love this line from one of our koans, and I know some of you know it, love it too, which is, not knowing is most intimate. Not knowing is most intimate. The first night of Sesshin, or rather the first morning, because it was about 5 a.m., and I had woken up ahead of the alarm, so eager as I was to come to Sesshin. And I was lying awake, and I heard something scratching at the tent, and then moving around the tent and sniffing at the front of the tent. And I wondered what it was. Maybe a fox. I was kind of hoping for that. Maybe a skunk. Not hoping for that. And it was time to get up, and I switched on the little light hanging from the top of my tent and started to get dressed. And this little black nose came pushing from under the flap of the rain fly. And then after the nose, following the nose, was this little head. And it was a young raccoon born this summer. And I thought it would just kind of look at me and startle and run away. But no, it just stayed there looking right in my eyes. And I was looking right back at it. And I think if it had been one of its parents, it probably would have said, oh, I know all about them. But this little guy didn't know. Or she didn't know. I'm not sure. I didn't get that good a look. And in that not knowing, you know, there was this lovely, not just curiosity, but this moment, one of these rare moments I've sometimes experienced of intimacy between me and a wild creature. So sweet. And then after savoring that a bit, I shoot it away because I didn't want it to come all the way in. I wasn't sure what would happen when I got out of my tent, and it was right there in that tiny space. So I shoot it away the way you would a little dog. And then it went away like it was a little dog. It was so funny. It just like pulled its head back out. And then it waited for me nearby to get out of my tent. And I walked out, and then it skittered away. And so, you know, you don't need to sleep out in the gazebo tonight and hope for a raccoon. Because those opportunities for intimacy are coming up every moment at this retreat. And it could be the feeling of your foot on the floor during kinhin, or it could be the smell of the fruit in your bowl as you're waiting for everyone to be served. Or it could be one of all those bells we hear, just that one. The one where you're not knowing just really opens you to total intimacy with it. And I really encourage you to continue this discipline of not knowing and open yourself up to all these opportunities in the precious hours that are left to us of this retreat. And then take that home with you. Don't leave it here. I hope that I've said enough to encourage you, but I don't know.